Hey, everybody.
Hello.
Doing okay. It's Wednesday, May 30th up in here.
Nice.
And this is Big Planet Comics Podcast number 46.
Broadcasting live from BPC Studios.
BPC Studios.
Sure, it's 46?
It is 46, because the last one was 45.
What? Nice. That's crazy.
I'm counting with numbers. Yeah, so my name's Kevin.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
And we're here doing the thing.
Doing that thing.
Doing the damn thing. Yeah, so... Yeah, whatever. I don't know. 46 isn't really anything special. Nothing to call home about, write home about, whatever people do to communicate with their homes.
Send a wire message.
Carrier pigeon.
Yeah, so I said I was Kevin. Did you guys say who you were?
I'm Nick.
I'm still Jared.
Oh, did you guys already say that?
I feel like we did. We might not have. We've done it a lot.
We'll cut all this out. It'll be fine.
Yep.
Whatever I'm saying right now, you shouldn't be listening to unless I'm really lazy.
Fix it in the editing bay, as right. always.
So if you want to listen to this podcast, obviously you've figured out how.
Well done.
Yeah, but you can subscribe to this on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
If you like, want to tell other friends about it.
Go to Facebook.
What do you do on Facebook?
Go to Facebook.com/BigPlanetComics.
Well, that's easy. You could also go to like Twitter, right?
Yeah, that's true.
What would be on Twitter? Big Planet Comics?
Yeah, at Big Planet Comics.
It's pretty simple.
The at symbol.
It's true.
Yeah, so wasn't a big week this week, but we got some pretty cool stuff to talk about,
Good week.
Yeah. Really good stuff.
Yeah, not a lot of comics, but some very good ones.
Solid.
Solid, bro.
So what'd you guys do for Memorial Day?
I drove all the way to Connecticut. My cousin's son turned one on Sunday.
No, he's old.
He is.
I went to 7 or 8 barbecues this weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
I went to like at least 2 a day.
That's awesome. And some days 3 or 4.
It was pretty intense. Yeah.
One at my house.
Yep.
We played a lot of badminton.
Yep.
Nice.
It got pretty intense.
It was pretty intense.
I also played disc golf for the first time this weekend.
Nice.
Wow. Really?
It was fun.
Frolf?
Yeah, frolf.
I'm still going to judge you.
I was surprised at how fun it was. I had to buy special weighted frisbees to play.
I didn't know that's a requirement.
Yeah, there's like a driver and like a mid-range and a putter.
Mm-hmm.
It's nuts. We were all up in them woods.
I have a friend who's a pro frolfer. I'm not even kidding.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. It's yeah. I didn't know you could be a pro frolfer.
Yep.
I hate saying frolf,
but it's pretty funny.
Yeah. Anything else going on? You guys got any funny stories to tell us? Putting everybody on the spot right now.
Man, humor spot. No.
No, me neither.
I went to the DMV this morning.
Yeah, that sounds hilarious.
I was a laugh riot.
I was in the DMV today.
Were you?
Yeah, District, Maryland, Virginia, baby.
Yeah, DMV.
All right, well, if we don't have anything else special to talk about.
We do, but we're not sure.
What do we have? Well, we do have some signings coming up. I guess we'd like to talk about those, right? June 2nd, Bethesda, Russ Kick, editor of the Graphic Canon, which just came out this week.
On Saturday, this Saturday.
Yeah, it's too long for us to talk about it on the podcast, because it has a lot of pros.
It does.
It has a lot of cons, too.
It doesn't have a lot of cons.
The cons are there's a lot of pros.
Yeah, indeed. And then on June 9th in Bethesda, we've got Nick Abadzis, friend of the store.
Friend of everybody.
With Hugo Tate, Oh America.
Nice.
Yeah, I saw he was he did a signing at Gosh in London.
Yep.
I like to think that they're like the London version of Big Planet Comics.
They'd like to be.
Gosh.
they wish. Yeah. And then on June 16th at College Park in Vienna, it's Free RPG Day.
Woo-woo.
Do people know what that is? Did we tell people what that was already?
We told them last week to get free RPGs.
Yep, run around, play with them.
During the day?
Yeah. Whatever you got to do.
We'll be here. There's some cool stuff. Battletech, Shadowrun.
Yep.
Battle Run, Shadow Tech.
Possibly chocolate dice, but we might have eaten them all by then.
There was some chocolate dice, but there's definitely less now than there was before.
They were unlucky. We had to destroy them.
I rolled to see if I should eat it. And all the numbers said yes.
I rolled the percentage dice to see how much chocolate was going to be in it. I got 60%.
Nice. That's pretty good.
Yeah. So, we got but you know what happened this week?
What?
We got a voicemail.
Oh, that's creepy. Exciting.
I need to bring the special effects back.
What are the special effects?
On my keyboard at home. I mean, they're in the computer.
Just bring some instruments with you.
They're in the old studio.
I need to bring an air horn.
I'll bring a vuvuzela.
Indeed. But it's exciting to get a voicemail.
It is.
Yeah. We don't actually have any. Nobody actually sent us any questions this week. No.
What?
No viewer text mail.
I'll be hornswoggled.
But there's... You will be hornswoggled. But there is a viewer voicemail. Do you think we should listen to it?
No. Let's do it anyway.
Hey, this is Matthew from Fairfax. I just had a question. With the success of single brand authors, usually writers, Do you think that the big companies would be benefit themselves by promoting their authors as kind of a cult, as a personality to follow? That is, like, when Brian K. Vaughan came out with Saga, it was promoted as Brian K. Vaughan's Saga. Would we benefit from putting the name above the masthead in these sort of cases, and developing like a guy like Jason Aaron and saying, you know, his next project is Jason Aaron's whatever, instead of trying to rely upon the fans finding out what their next project is, kind of promote that kind of cult of personality? Thanks.
That's a pretty good question.
Yep. Thank you, Matthew of Fairfax.
Yes, thank you, Matthew King of Fairfax.
You got promoted.
Yeah, you're the king now. You're the best in Fairfax.
Better than the mayors.
So I don't know. I think that's pretty interesting. It seems like that's a thing that happens sometimes. Like he said,
whenever like Neil Gaiman puts out a book, it's always like Neil Gaiman's.
Yeah, Neil Gaiman's Neverwhere. Even the big guys like Alan Moore, it's not like Alan Moore's League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. So
that's true.
It is left up to people to kind of figure that stuff out themselves. I think there's a weird thing with comics in that, like, a lot of people don't think about the creators of comics. They follow characters and things. So if it's like Jason Aaron's The Hulk, for example, I don't know if that would turn some people off.
I don't think so. I think his point was a good point, that, you know, that Brian K. Vaughan had Saga, which is his own book that he's publishing through Image, rather than Saga is a character owned by DC or Marvel that Brian K. Vaughan happens to be writing. Because I think that would help on a lot of books if it did say Jason Aaron really big across like Incredible Hulk, which he just started writing. Like, we had people coming today, it's like, holy crap, Jason Aaron's writing Incredible Hulk. I'm going to check it out. The problem is, I think for most major, especially superhero characters, they rotate people off so quickly that it would be even more noticeable when someone awesome left a book.
That's true, yeah.
Unless you followed up with an equally cool, big marquee name.
And Marvel kind of tries to do it. Like, they did that thing where they were like, you know, these are the architects. These are our big
young guns.
Big writers. Yeah, stuff like that. Like, these are our big writers and big artists, like, trying to promote them. But then they never really do, like, when their book comes out, it's never like...
Yeah, they do it in the advertising maybe a little bit, but they don't do it in, like, actually on the covers. Even Saga, which was his example, I mean, it doesn't say Brian K. Vaughan's Saga on the front. It just says Saga.
Yeah.
So,
that's true.
It has his name on it, like, at the top, but not
super big.
It's not, like, huge. No, it's not like novels where you get, like, a book and there's, like, the author's name is usually just as big or bigger than the actual title of the book.
Which is even weirder, because if you think about it, there's, like, the marquee names that were created by an author for a novel that, like, who did The Bourne Identity? Ludlum? It's like Robert Ludlum's _S, The Bourne whatever, written by somebody else.
Oh, right.
So that is now a brand name more than the title of the book.
Yeah, like,
it's even more than the real author of that.
Like Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six, and it's
right, which he has nothing to do, and he was just like a creative guy behind it or wrote some of the early ones.
I think the biggest problem with all of it is that most comic people are definitely the kind of people that would follow characters.
Yeah.
And the people that do follow writers usually know, they're in the know, and they know, you know, like, everybody who knows, you know, Jason Aaron is going to read Jason Aaron's books. Like, they're going to find out which book he's writing. And it's hard. I don't know if it would be, I guess it maybe would help if they tried to promote it, but
I think
a lot
would.
Of people just don't care. That's the problem.
No,
yeah,
but
no, it is true. But some people do care. So it's not, there's not really a big negative to it, but it's like, it's just, I think it's the same thing with movies. It's like, you know, the Avengers, people love the Avengers. Probably, you know, 2% of people that saw The Avengers know that Joss Whedon directed The Avengers.
You mean Marvel's The Avengers? Because I follow Marvel as a creative force wherever they go.
Yeah, I mean, I bet more people would think that Stan Lee directed The Avengers than Joss Whedon.
Well, that's actually what I was thinking, because, like, you do get Stan Lee Presents on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, that's
and, like,
true.
You know, whatever, Batman created by Bob Kane. If they had built this up from the beginning, it was like Bob Kane's Batman, and Bob Kane was still around as a creative force, that might be something. But it's like, if you're not creating new books, then you have no marquee status left on a superhero character.
Also, with the major publishers, I mean, no, you know, there's, you know, DC's probably pretty happy that it's not Alan Moore's The Watchmen.
Yep.
Or, you know, Bob Kane's Batman or Jack Kirby's The Avengers or something. Because
no, if they had the rights to it, I think Alan Moore's before Watchmen, _S, would sell as well or better than it, even if he has still had nothing to do with it. Because I think a lot of people...
That would be so shady.
I know, but, you know, if it was just a thing they'd created for him and he'd move on to other stuff or given him permission to do it, then, yeah, why not?
Yeah, I think it's something you see a little more in the, like, indie.
Yeah, you see a lot more. Like, the thing is with the superhero stuff, it's almost always about the characters. Like, like they tried different people on Moon Knight, like, a million times, and nobody... Like, Bendis wrote it for a long time with Alex Maleev, and it was great, you know, but nobody
still
bought it.
But still nobody bought it.
People just don't care.
Yeah.
Like, the indie people care, but then... You don't really need to advertise them because those guys know, like, the writers and artists usually.
Right. It's like when a Yoshihiro Tatsumi book comes out, his name's always, you know, the biggest thing on the cover because, and if not, people will be like, well, what's this weird manga? But if they know who Tatsumi is, you know, they follow him. Or, like, I feel like Dan Clowes is probably like that as well. Right. And, yeah, so I don't know. I think it's pretty interesting. And then, of course, recently, like, some of the older collections, there's, like, the Jack Kirby's Fourth World, you know. Or, you know, the Manara Library.
Yeah, and now, like, Marvel puts out, like, Fantastic Four by Jonathan Hickman.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah,
Marvel's been doing that a lot.
And they'll be like, you know, they've been putting out, you know, Daredevil by
Brubaker or Bendis. So Marvel is going in that direction.
They throw it on there, like, if it's somebody that people already know.
Yeah.
But it's hard for them to promote people.
It's good for them. It's like, even within Daredevil, that is the iconic run of Daredevil.
Yeah.
So they're doing that a lot more. They're like ultimate books for characters like that.
I think it's like an example of where it would probably be good would be like, you know, Justice League Dark number 9 that just came out. Jeff Lemire is writing that now.
True.
And it's a lot better. I mean, it wasn't bad before, but, it's like, I think if people knew that Jeff Lemire was writing it, a couple more people might have picked it up at least. Because that's a guy that maybe people don't know. It's not like when Grant Morrison is writing something and it's kind of just becomes part of... the consciousness of the very few people that actually read comics.
Yeah, if it was across the title, like from the writer of Jeff Lemire's Justice League Dark and then number 9.
Yeah, if it says like on the cover, like Justice League Dark from the writer of Animal Man, which is like his most successful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, Animal Man should have been bigger on that cover than Justice League Dark.
Yeah, so thanks for the question, Matt. I thought it was a pretty interesting one. And
very curious.
Well, yeah, we're gonna keep thinking about it.
True.
All right, so you guys want to review some comic books? That's what we do, right?
Let's jump right in.
One of the things we do.
That is one of the various things we do.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
We love comics, they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
What time is it?
Review time.
It's time for Jared to check his phone. You got anything special on there?
Got some texts.
He's
tweeting.
I did get a picture of the United States versus Brazil friendly match going on right now at FedEx Field.
No spoilers.
I just saw the field. I'm like, what's going on? Ah, I can't look. So.
Well, did you get a text about Batman Death by Design hardcover by Chip Kidd and Dave Taylor?
I got one from you right now.
You did? Yeah, I just sent you one. So this is our first book this week, and we're starting off with something pretty awesome.
Yes. If you're not familiar with Chip Kidd, he's done a bunch of kind of like Batman, I don't even know how to describe them, like Batman design books.
Well, yeah, Chip Kidd has designed a lot of stuff. Basically, he did a series of books by Chronicle that were kind of about merchandise for Wonder Woman and Batman and I think Superman. He also did one about Peanuts. That was in the same format as the Fantagraphics books and predated those.
It's kind of like the culture of these characters rather than the stories.
And he designed the Batmanga book, and he wrote a novel called Cheese Monkeys, which is kind of Catcher in the Rye for art school kids.
I'm pretty sure this is the first comic he's ever written, though, right?
As far as I know.
It's the first thing I've read, and it's incredible. first of all, the art by Dave Taylor is... pretty much the really big draw here.
Yeah, where did this Dave Taylor kid come from? Is he new?
No, he's done stuff before. Supposedly he used to have a slightly different style that was very like Mobius-ish. That's something I found out today.
Really?
The art in this has a kind of like pencil and charcoal look to it, which keeps it really loose. But then he's really good at drawing architecture too, which is a big part of this book.
Yeah, and the story of this is actually loosely based on some real world events. Like it says in the beginning, like there's a demolition of the Pennsylvania station in 1963 and a collapse in Midtown Manhattan in 2008 of a construction crane. And he's like, he was just thinking one day, like, what if these were connected? And he's like, and he just went with that and set it all in Gotham City.
Yep.
And so basically starts off with Bruce Wayne giving a speech about tearing down this old train station, and then a crane falls and almost kills him. And this reporter starts investigating it. And leads to a crazy story involving the Joker and a new kind of superhero or villain.
Slash supervillain, yeah.
Yeah, and this kind of architect who is supposed to be this kind of wunderkind, and maybe things aren't quite as they seem.
Yeah, it's about like corrupt like unions and stuff like that.
It was an interesting mix because it was like it had a lot of like history of Gotham. Like this, the train station was built by Bruce Wayne's father and designed by this architect's father. So there's a lot of history about like, you know, what has Gotham been and what has it become and how has it changed over the years and what is its heritage. But the whole book is kind of drawn in an Art Deco style, and the Batman costume is definitely like the early 1930s, like very, I can't describe the ears very well, but like not, just
pointier.
Yeah, pointier. I was going to say pointed ears. I'm like, they're always pointed. But yeah, like the look of the 1930s, it just fits really well.
And I could, what time period did this take place in? I was kind of trying to figure it out. It seems
like it's in
the 60s. Everything's got that kind of radio age.
It takes place in the Batman animated series.
I think that's like where maybe there are video televisions and maybe somebody has a cell phone every once in a while.
Right.
This reminded me a lot of actually like Batman the animated series.
Oh, yeah.
Well, had a strong Art Deco feel to the architecture in that as well.
All in the mood and I don't know. It's just, and the new superhero villain guy or whatever he is definitely reminding me of the Gray Ghost or something.
Yeah,
like
he looks a little. He reminds me a little Lobster Johnson too. In his design,
very pulpy.
Yeah,
this whole thing.
I thought the story was cool. It kind of had a Chinatown feel to it with kind of the political stuff, and I feel like anything that has to do with land and architecture always ends up reminding me of Chinatown.
Right, but no, this had like also a Batman Year One feel, like a very early, very simplistic Batman, very corrupt city. A lot more character and like personality driven than a lot of the kind of high tech or over the top Batman stories are, and it was amazing.
But even with all the character stuff, there are a lot of like big set pieces in it too. It's like in very Batman ways, like giant collapsing nightclubs on roofs,
and booby traps and crazy
stuff.
There's
like a part where somebody's like tied to a giant clock, and
people trapped inside of a crane that's about to explode.
It's so good. I was saying today, I feel like this will be a book that people will talk about when they talk about stuff like Year One or Killing Joke or
kind of like
Long
an iconic
Halloween.
Batman work.
Yeah, because it has its own personality, which I think is something that's true of all those books.
Right.
And then it's a nice complete story that you can read, which I think is it's like
a standalone
story thing, which I think is something that Batman has always been really well suited to. And
it's awesome.
And it's awesome. Yeah. I mean, that's the main thing, right?
Yeah.
It's like it could be all these things, but the execution's so good and it's so readable.
Yeah.
Like, it's really engaging, and it's enough of a little bit. There's, like, enough mystery in it that you're kind of, you know, it just it keeps you hooked.
Yeah, there's a few twists and stuff. A
few.
Some turns.
It's just, I mean, just come in, flip through it, and you'll probably buy it right away. I mean.
Yeah, it's a nice deluxe package, too. It's really well done.
Yeah, it's definitely the kind of thing where you'll know if you like it or not. The only thing that it kind of sucks is it's got the new DC logo right on the front.
I did see that, and I was like, really? Put that on a spine or something?
Everything's so well designed, and then there's that thing. Our highest recommendation.
Indeed.
Yes.
10 planets out of 5.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of which, there's something new. From now on, we'll be trying to, on the bigplanetcomics.com webpage, when we post the podcast, we'll be trying to put up an interior sample page or panel from these comics. So when you just hear us talking about it, go to the webpage when it comes out, podcast, and you can say, this is right. These guys are awesome.
So as you're listening to this, you can actually see these.
Exactly.
Batman pictures.
Exactly. All right. So up next, we've got Cowboy, A Boy and His Horse hardcover. There's so much.
Wait. Doesn't this also have our highest recommendation?
Spoiler. Maybe we hate this book.
Well, let's find out.
You don't know how we feel.
I wish you would tell me.
So, is everything in here written by Nate Cosby, even the shorts? That's what I was trying to figure out.
I think some of them are not.
I think the shorts are not.
Okay. But, well, the main story in this is written by Nate Cosby with art by Chris Eliopoulos.
Oh, yeah. No, the shorts are written and drawn by different people.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then there's this main story about this kid, Cowboy.
Which are like 4 chapters long, basically.
Yeah. And then there are little 2-page stories that are sandwiched in between those by some pretty awesome people. Roger Langridge, Brian Clevenger, Scott Wagner.
The team behind Atomic Robo.
Yeah, Mitch Gerard. The Colleen Coover one's pretty awesome.
Yep.
Yeah. And Mike Myhack, who I don't know, but his was pretty cool too.
Something.
It's not the guy who did Daisy Cutter, right? Because it looked
that's Kazu Kibuishi.
Oh, is that Kazu Kibuishi?
Yeah, nobody knew who it was him back then.
Yeah, weird. I didn't know that either. But the main story in this is pretty dang amazing.
All right, so basically take one of the best written, like, dialect-heavy cowboy stories ever, where the lone bounty hunter comes riding into town to find the no-good varmint and, like, you know, deal with him or capture him or whatever it is, and then make sure that the bounty hunter is a 10-year-old kid who still acts and talks exactly like he's the toughest bounty hunter in the world and carries his personal handmade shotgun with a cute little stuffed horse head as the handle. And then multiple twists.
Would it be giving too much away to say who yeah. these bounties are?
I think you kind of have to say it because that's
an awesome
twist.
I mean, the main plot of this is him basically trying to take in his family.
Who are all criminals.
All of his family is criminals, yeah. And he's tired of it and he wants to take them all in and make them pay because they made his childhood terrible.
Yeah, and they're also terrible people and are shame and disgrace on the family, so... I don't know. There's, like, so much good stuff in this. Chris Eliopoulos, what's the comics he did? Because he's done so many good...
He did, like, those Franklin Richards ones.
Right. Which were basically, like, Calvin and Hobbes done with the son of Reed Richards and
Did he do Fantastic G-Man Four. And the mini Marvel stuff?
Yeah, he did the mini Marvel stuff.
Because I think somebody told me that there are two Chris Eliopoulos's.
No. That's crazy talk.
Yeah, maybe that's not true.
But anyway, so yeah, the art's fantastic. It's really cartoony, but in like a really good way.
The dialogue's the best part. It's exactly like you would imagine in a John Wayne movie or something.
Yeah, I was looking for some examples of the dialogue. Here's one of my favorite lines.
Everywhere.
So he goes into a bar and there are some you know, varmints there. some low down dirty bandits. The guy says to him, I mean, this kid is what, 8 years old?
Ten.
Oh, he's 10. Ten. Okay. And the guy says to him, mighty big gun for a little boy. And the kid says, wouldn't worry too much about my gun, sir, but I might fret about its bullets. It's like that kind of stuff.
He's just so hard-boiled. It's amazing.
Yeah, and it's not just like one line like that.
That's his personality, and the whole book's like that, yeah.
Yeah, there's a part where he's at a whorehouse, or, you know, whatever you're supposed to call a whorehouse.
Brothel.
Yeah, and one of the ladies there, he's basically sitting talking to her, and he has his little horsey shotgun, or it's actually just a pea shooter. But she says, you intend to cause a ruckus? And he says, I do not, but the byproduct of my intentions could well lead to ruckus.
Yeah, it's exactly, it's like somehow they get the perfect like 19th century like dialect, but perfectly tuned to this little kid.
One of the funniest, most enjoyable things I read in a long time. It just had me cracking up the entire time.
And the simple story is great, and you don't even realize till the end that it's got, like, you know, you get kind of emotionally attached to what this kid, you know,
there's
is
layers,
doing.
There's twists, there's great characters. And this is for all ages, so, like I said, pea shooter, no one gets killed. But there's a lot of violence and drama.
This week's pretty crazy. I mean, this is like one of the best things I read in a long time, and it's not the best thing I read this week. Neither is Batman.
I will say I like the little asides, the little two-page things are fun, and some of them are really good. They do feel a little out of place. I mean, obviously the theme is the same because they're all cowboy related.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, kid friendly, but I was so into the main story that I wasn't ever excited when I got to one of those.
Yeah, right.
True.
They're great, but
they're still great. They don't really take anything away from the book. I just thought it was worth mentioning.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So another book that gets our highest recommendation.
Yes.
We are highest recommendationing things a lot today. All right. So up next, we've got Dancer Number One. This is a new book by Nathan Edmondson, who wrote Who is Jake Ellis?
And The Activity.
It came out a few weeks ago.
And
it
did. Grifter,
yeah,
sadly.
We missed it 2 weeks in a row. So basically, we really loved Who is Jake Ellis. People who listen to the podcast probably know that because we've talked about it quite a bit. And we've been kind of waiting for Nathan Edmondson to pull something else great.
To live up to that potential.
Out from under his hat. Yeah, like, Activity is good, but it has
flaws.
It's not great, I don't think.
Grifter had a lot more flaws.
Yeah, and but Dancer seems to be off to a good start. Somebody else talk about this because I remember things about it, but I can't describe the plot.
So Dancer is basically just about an kind of old assassin who's trying to get out of the game, doing his last job, and he's dating this woman who is a dancer,
ballerina.
He wants to run away with her, and he tells her as much, and then...
But she doesn't know that he's an assassin.
No, she doesn't know. But then, as he's telling her all this, you know, that let's go away together, he gets attacked by a bunch of mysterious men who are following him. And then they run away, and there's a crazy twist at the end, and that's it. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, simple. So it's basically, you know, having her suddenly thrown into his violent world he used to be part of, and him having to defend both of them. And like, she's like, what have I been, you know, who's this man I've been dating? So there's that typical thing of like, you know, how much can you reveal of your past, blah,
and,
blah, blah. But
yeah, and it's a
lots
good,
of action and like,
and him know. Having to tell her kind of what's going on is a
right,
good mechanic to introduce the reader to kind of his story.
Yeah.
And he's really cool, and he's really like kind of like a gruff badass dude.
Yeah.
And then there's a crazy twist that changes the book,
like, which we cannot reveal
no.
at all.
Yeah, yeah, but
because it's really crazy,
it makes the book like something completely different.
Yeah, and but, makes it better and more exciting. I think,
but it feels like a Bourne Identity kind of like the movies, where it's just, you know, action packed with some good character build up
and the twist is very Who Is Jake Ellis kind of big.
True.
Yeah, it reminded me a bit of and I don't mean this in a bad way. There's this movie called The American that came out a couple years ago with George Clooney.
I want to see that.
Oh, it's so good, man.
Really?
He's like this.
I still want to see that. Yeah.
He's this retired assassin who's like in love, and it's a good movie.
The thing is, like, I was on board like already as soon as it started. Like, it was, the tone was awesome. I liked the main character and the action was cool. But then it was so good that I didn't expect there to be some kind of twist. I just thought, like, this is going to be a cool action thing. And then the twist came, and I was like, all right.
Yep.
Oh, I should say, the art in this is by Nick Klein, who I didn't even mention. And the art is good. It's got kind of a, kind of like that Michael Lark. Sean Phillips kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I've seen the name Nick Klein elsewhere, but I can't remember what he's done at this point.
Yeah, I feel like he's done like some Cal McDonald mysteries or something.
Right.
Like
That seems
Call in Nick Klein. Tell us what else you worked on.
Yeah, call us Nick or Nicolette or whoever you are.
Yeah.
Might be a lady.
It's true.
I don't think ladies usually go by Nick, do they? You tell me, Nick. Are you a lady?
Sometimes.
Yeah, so this is another really good book, though.
Yep.
I don't know if it gets that highest recommendation.
It gets a very good recommendation. Yeah. You should check it out.
Yeah, I'm excited to read it, number two.
Definitely off to a good start.
Which should be out really soon, since it's been like 3 weeks since this book came out. All right, up next is a little dynamo of a book over here. This is Everything We Miss, a new hardcover from Nobrow by Luke Pearson, who wrote the Hilda Folk books. Hilda and the Mountain People. I can't remember the second one, his name. But this is not a Hilda book.
No.
No, but
although it seems almost like it takes place in the same kind of world.
It's got the same sense of kind of fantastic realism.
It does have like these kind of magical creatures, but it's certainly not
sunny.
Yeah, it's not a happy little curiosity like Hilda is.
This was the best thing I read this week.
Yeah.
By far. I every page I loved, and everything about it is just so good.
So the main story is I mean, it's a weird book.
The main theme.
I would say that, the main theme of the book is relationships and death and... Oh,
it's
God.
About breaking
but
up.
No, yeah, but the title says it's Everything We Miss. It's kind of like the idea that, like, you might miss a connection with someone you pass in the hallway that could have been the love of your life, or, like, what just happened around the corner from you. So a lot of, like, the little things you miss in life, but the main theme is a relationship falling apart.
Yeah,
like the unseen things that influence events in your life.
And then that's kind of magnified by this little kind of magical, I don't know if you'd call it magical element, but
surreal.
The idea of these creatures who kind of watch humanity and not even help, like, you know, they're passively watch everything that's going on and kind of see the things that we miss.
Right.
They're all kind of metaphors for stuff. Like, there's these shadowy beings that, like, dig into, like, his skull and make him say really terrible things to his girlfriend. It's kind of like just, you know, like, I don't even know what the word is. Like, not a metaphor. It's like, oh God, what's the word? Anyway, it's trying to explain, you know, like why sometimes you say like things that you don't mean that are really hurtful. And it's like there's these evil beings that are pushing you to say these things.
Or that there's like a ghost that has suddenly possessed someone, so they act slightly differently. It's just the idea that there's all these extra things running around everything and through everyone.
Yeah, it's kind of a hard book to explain, but everything about it works. It actually doesn't feel like the certain elements feel like the other Luke Pearson books, but a lot of it really reminded me a lot of like a Kevin Huizenga book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially in panel layout and things like that, which is from, you know, a high compliment from me. I mean, that's what Huizenga does best.
Yeah.
And it's a Nobrow book, so of course it's looks amazing. I think is it just like two-tone?
It's orange and white with a little bit of gray and black.
Yeah. And oh man, I don't even know what else to say about
every single the art is just so incredible. Like, everything he draws is so good, and yeah, the facial expressions. And
again, we have a sample. We'll have a sample of this up on the webpage when the podcast is up. And it's just like, he kind of takes like the simple stories, like the other books we just talked about are awesome, but are very straightforward in the stories. And he adds like more of what you can do with comics, with like just asides and, you know, weird layouts and stuff that just build on the story and add so much to it. It's amazing.
Yeah, it shows. Yeah, I mean, it's very formalist in that way, and it still creates like an emotional impact. I will say, you know, just as a little bit of a warning, if this sounds interesting to you, this book is very devastating.
Yes,
yeah, have some chocolate around at the end.
Devastating. Yeah,
have some chocolate dice to eat.
Really brutal.
But the reason why it is that way is because it's so effective. I mean, it's a great book. I think it's probably, I mean, what is it, 40 pages? But it's probably one of the best things I've read this year.
This may end up being my best favorite book of the year.
We'll have to keep it in mind because it's a long way till the end of the
year. Yeah, it's going to be really hard for something to top that. I don't know.
You should have heard Nick talking about Cowboy before he read everything
we
miss.
Cowboy is different.
Yeah, that's true.
We just got four more books. We'll be talking about Ravagers pretty soon.
All right, but up next,
that's a highest recommendation.
Definitely.
Higher than the highest recommendation.
Everyone should buy that.
The highest recommendation. Yeah. All right, so up next we have Grim Reaper, number 1 of 4. This is by Curtis J. Wiebe, who writes,
he wrote Green Wake.
Wow. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Oh.
Break, Green Wake.
He wrote something else really good that came out recently.
He did. Oh, man. Sorry, Kurt.
Something really.
Kurt, write in. Tell us your whole bibliography.
And this is drawn by Aloiso C. Santos. Mm-hmm. Which I'm going to assume that was pretty close.
Good.
Yeah, it's a book about a Grim Leaper, I guess, which is, I mean, that's what it is, right? I mean, it seems like basically he's a guy that jumps into other people's bodies right before they're about to die.
Yeah.
Well,
kind of,
there's
right?
more to it. I mean, it's basically the opening setting is this guy sitting at a funeral and he, you know, tries to hit on a girl and walks out. And basically in his aside, you know, breaking the fourth wall thing, he's like, I have died 7 times, and this is me attending my own funeral, and I'm now in a new body. And very soon after that, he dies. And as soon as he dies, he literally goes to the afterlife. You see him trying to go through a passage or whatever, and there's a weird supernatural thing, maybe a demon, maybe an angel, maybe a monster. Something happens, and he comes back to Earth, and he's in a new body.
But he must be jumping into other people's bodies.
Yeah,
right.
Because these people have families and things. I mean, there are people attending these funerals. So it's not like he's starting
from scratch.
So it's
more like he's possessed somebody.
Yeah, he jumps into like a game show, like somebody who's
contestant.
In the middle of a game show. And so that's kind of the basic setup that, and then in the course of the story, he meets a girl who seems to be in the same situation as him.
Right.
And from what I can tell, it's going to be a series of misconnections between these two characters.
Yeah,
possibly. But also the thing that they're trying to figure out how this is happening, because they keep being reborn or possessing or whatever people all vaguely in the same area that they're all from. So it's not like they're ever going across the world. It's all in the same place. And
it's definitely
going
to be mostly a love story, though.
Yeah.
It's called Grim Leaper, A Love Story to Die For.
There you go.
Well, I'll have to say I did not find this book to die for.
Really?
Yeah.
I liked it a lot.
You know, I thought I wasn't a huge fan of the art, for one.
Oh.
I don't know. The art style is a little hard to describe, but it just didn't really do it for me. And I think the concept is interesting. It's just, the main character is such a jerk.
That's true.
Which, you know, normally wouldn't bother me if there was something interesting about him, but it just seems like he's just like everything he says, he's just complaining the whole time. And it was actually really driving me crazy. Like, because, and I, it, there wasn't enough drama in the story for me to really draw me in. So the combination of that and this kind of despicable dude who I feel like thinks he's hot stuff, but is just really annoying, and I don't know.
Yeah.
It kind of bugged me. I don't know. I just couldn't get into it.
I think the setting was, I really like the premise a lot. That's what I'm going with. Like, I want to know what happens next in the overall story. And I thought the love connection was an interesting take on it. So I like that. And yeah, he's a jerk, but I didn't mind that so much because it is kind of disappointing how little he's doing every time he's being reborn. He's just like, oh, well, I'm probably going to get killed soon.
I think it's supposed to be part of the character. You know, of course, it's, you start him off that way so that there can be a character arc. And he'll end up as a better person than he was when he started out. But I feel like the way it's done, it's just like really telegraphed. And I don't know. I couldn't get interested in it.
I liked it a little more than you, but I definitely agree. Like I don't know. The art just didn't, I just couldn't get into it. It's not necessarily bad throughout. It's just, I don't,
Something
about it.
Here, every once in a while, it's not that great. Here's what I think happens at this.
The coloring's really weird.
At this point, a new Image book comes out, and I think it's going to be amazing.
True.
And this one, while it was good, and I think maybe a couple years ago when there wasn't quite as much stuff coming out, it would have really gotten me excited. But I feel like there's so much good stuff right now.
Does it help that it's from the Shadow Line part of Image?
is that still like Jim Valentino's line? Yeah.
I really liked Wiebe's Green Wake. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
That was like his writing. Stronger start than this one.
Well, I thought Green Wake started off well. I mean, do you still read Green Wake?
It ended.
It's over.
Yeah. Oh, but just recently, right? Did you read the whole thing?
Yeah.
I only read the beginning 12, of it.
12 issues.
Yeah.
It was great. And
what else did he? Oh, he wrote something. So yeah, something really good just recently. Came out I can't remember. Probably something we reviewed on here.
Yeah. We'll look it up and get back to you.
But I should say it's not a bad book. Yeah. And you know, if the premise seems interesting to you, I would say check it out.
Yeah.
But.
And this week was just compared to everything else, it was just like, you know, there's no comparison.
Yeah.
I did read it.
I enjoyed
right
it
right after reading Moon Moth, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
It wasn't the worst book of the week though.
No, definitely not. There was only actually one really terrible book this week.
Yeah. We'll review it soon,
folks.
We'll
be talking about it soon. All right, so next up we've got Monsieur Jean, The Singles Theory. This is by Philip Dupuis and Charles Barbarian, the guys who did Get a Life and what is the name of that other book?
Oh,
it's
man. Not,
it's like Tricked or something like that. I can't remember.
Exit or something, yeah.
No, I think that's Sartre. But yeah, so basically, the Monsieur Jean series is, I assume, a fairly popular series in France.
They've been doing it for 20 years, and it's kind of their iconic book. It's won them awards. It's what they're known for.
Yeah. And it's a very autobiographical, from what I can tell, series of stories, kind of just about Jean and his friend Felix, who I assume are Barbarian and Dupuis. I don't know.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Well, I guess they're not, because Felix isn't really an artist. He's just like a dude who comes up with stupid theories.
Yeah, he's kind of an idiot.
I don't know why Jean is even friends with them, to be honest. But basically, it's about them kind of just hanging out and, you know, spouting philosophical and getting drunk and talking about girls a lot and being very French.
Yeah. I mean, Jean himself is a writer, so there is the creative connection. And so, like I said, they've done a lot of other adventures and tales of him. And like in one, he like goes to Portugal for a book tour. So, you know, they've tried different stuff with this one.
And there's stuff about his book, like him being an author in here too, like he's being interviewed about having writer's block. I thought that part was actually pretty funny.
Right. But this one's largely concerned about his friend Felix, who has just been broken up with by someone and his life is just falling apart to the point where he moves in with Jean and is just like a terrible influence and just, yeah, not handling it well. It's kind of his life is destroyed.
Yeah. And I feel like Jean and Felix have like definitely two different views of life. I feel like
and love. Yeah.
I feel like Jean is like very he's like a romantic, but if any kind of suffers from like terrible ennui as well.
Yeah.
And Felix is very much like
he's very cynical. He's
very cynical, but then he's very like he has a lot of bravado as well.
Yeah.
And is kind of considers himself a bit of a ladies' man and is kind of animalistic, even though he accuses other people of being animals.
Right. And he has a lot of crazy theories about the world, which the main one is, you know, that the book's titled after is The Singles Theory, which is his theory that
Stupidest thing ever, but that's kind of the point.
You know, single people are not attracted to other single people.
Right.
And he's saying that, you know, single people usually end up with somebody who had a boyfriend when they met them or a girlfriend when they met them. They don't actually ever date
each
other.
Yeah, they only go after someone else. And otherwise everyone would just be together and everyone would be happy. So, But I don't know.
But this is it's kind of, you have to read it to really get a feel for it. It's always really funny. It's not like a kind of book where there's like a lot of incident. It's mostly just settings for people to kind of stand around and talk with each other. But
there's some incidents like the elevator and going to the party out in the country. And
And that's probably maybe the longest thing in here is that country party. And that one's pretty funny too. But, it's a good book. I don't think it's up to the level of maybe Get a Life.
No, that was a much longer story than this. And
And I think it's better served by being a longer story.
Yeah.
And I think that one's worth checking out. But I mean, if you're already a fan of their stuff, definitely get this book. I was happy that this came out because I read that other stuff.
I loved it throughout. I didn't read Get a Life at all.
Oh, really?
And this was originally just in black and white, but they kind of added a duotone color to it. Gave it some blue. And
which fits really well.
Yeah, and it looks great. It's definitely worth checking out.
Yes.
Yep.
All right, up next is The Moon Moth by Jack Vance.
Well,
based on a story by Jack Vance.
Yeah.
Who's Jack Vance?
And Humayun Ibrahim. We're going to go with that.
Sounds good.
Who is a newcomer. This is the first thing he's ever done, and I guess his first thing is this amazing graphic novel from First Second.
Wow, he did the writing and the artwork.
Yeah, he adapted it from the original Jack Vance short story from 1961. Jack Vance is a writer who is closely associated with our store.
Indeed. He's kind of famous for a lot of fantasy and sci-fi stuff. He's a huge influence on a lot of people. In fact, there's a big introduction at the beginning talking about there's going to be an anthology book coming out of all the people who are inspired by him writing books set in his worlds or stuff. So, for example, things that he influenced are Michael Chabon, the game Dungeons & Dragons, various things like that. Neil Gaiman, of course. But for us, he also wrote a fine fantasy novel about a gigantic planet where someone has an adventure trying to travel across this planet called Big Planet. And Joel Pollack, our founder, wrote Mr. Vance and said, hey, could I use the name of your book for our store? And hence Big Planet Comics. Nice. So Joel has a letter from Jack Vance somewhere in his office.
Nice. Pretty cool. I just found that out. So I just bought that book.
Did you?
Yeah, I'm going to read
good.
It.
Yeah. Nice. Planet of Adventure is, I think, his best. But anyway.
I knew because they have the book at Bethesda.
Oh, that's right. They have the book up on the shelf, the actual novel. Yeah.
But, so, Jared, why don't you try to tell people what this story is?
All right. So this, like, the thing I like about Vance is he comes up with some of the most creative alien different societies, either, you know, actual aliens or just, like, different situation, you know, where it's like, oh, I met some elves in the woods and they had pointy ears, but other than that, they're identical to humans. Like, yeah, that's the kind of cheap cop-out fantasy or sci-fi.
Completely different society.
Yeah. Like, the guys in this one is basically a man is an ambassador or an agent or a diplomat or something to a completely alien world where everyone on the world believes that you should conceal your inner identity, so everyone wears a mask at all times, but the mask you wear, you can change every day and kind of depicts what you're saying about yourself. But you also have to be able to live up to what the mask says.
Yeah, it's also a sign of your place in the world.
Right.
In society.
So there's like higher society, you know, people below you. There's a slave group. And then everyone communicates by singing. And they have to play an instrument at the same time. And the instrument that you're playing says, kind of like colors what you're about to say. So if you use like just slapping a bunch of wooden blocks together when you're singing, that's what you use when you speak to a slave. So if you use that speaking to like the king, it would be horribly offensive.
Yeah.
So this poor guy is thrown into the society where he barely understands everything, and everything he does kind of has the potential for a diplomatic incident or just getting him in trouble.
And all of it almost does.
Yeah. He's trying his hardest, but he's obviously very inept at this society and just doesn't quite get it. But the plot of this is that having been on this alien world for a very short period of time, a known criminal, murderer, assassin, some guy, shows up on his planet and he's ordered to find this guy. And unfortunately, this guy is an expert on this planet, and as soon as he has a mask on, we'll be able to blend in very well.
Yeah.
So the twist is that he's worried that this man will then be coming after him and he could change a mask and maybe murder one of his friends and take his place and he won't be able to know it, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and people are not, you know, his plight doesn't really interest anybody very much.
No.
Because it's interesting because there's an idea that, you know, maybe this guy is switching identities with other people to hide himself.
Right.
And the other people on the planet don't even care about that. They're like, he can present himself as these people as long as he interacts with me in the same way that they would, because
true,
the mask is the thing that's important.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to show, you know, a lot of things like we've talked about this before, like Avatar and Dances with Wolves kind of have a newcomer come into a world.
Right.
And even when we're talking about Dancer, so as an excuse to kind of introduce you to this world.
Yeah.
And I think that this book did a really good job of that.
You slowly see, like, through his actions, like, how the world is set up, like, how the monetary system works, and, like, everything is slowly revealed by what he's doing.
Yeah, so by the time you get to the end of the story, you know, at the beginning, everything's completely alien,
right,
to the reader as well. But by the end, you can kind of see mistakes that he's potentially making when he's dealing with people and stuff.
And see nuances that you only would pick up that he doesn't pick up on.
Yeah, because you've kind of seen how this world works. And I thought that was one of the things that was really interesting about this. The art in this is really cool, too. The artist is really good at drawing masks.
Yeah. Really weird, creepy masks.
Really weird, creepy masks, which just add to this kind of... It's almost got like a... I could see like somebody like Charles Burns being really influenced by something like this with X'd Out. It's got a really weird feel to it.
It's really creepy. Like, everybody's really creepy. Like, all the characters, no matter what.
You really get the alien vibe of, like, you're not quite sure these people are human and they're not acting in a way that you would understand or is logical. But, like, all the people,
they're
like,
emotionless.
Yeah, when they're singing, like, all the word bubbles have different colors or different, like, formats to them depending on what kind of song they're using, what kind of instrument they're playing. And, yeah.
And I think the sort of alien nature of everything really heightens the tension of the kind of almost murder mystery part of it as well. It's not a murder mystery, really, but like a thriller.
Yeah.
And it makes it just that much worse. It's that kind of Alfred Hitchcock, you know, man out of place thing. It's like, you know, it's why Alfred Hitchcock's stories are always in like Morocco or like an abandoned hotel.
Yeah, and it's like
an unfamiliar situation that heightens the tension.
Yeah, right. It's like, and how do you identify somebody when everybody wears masks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. It's really, really great. It's really
high as possible recommendation. Yeah.
And it's totally unlike anything I've ever read. It's gotten me really interested in reading other things by Jack Vance.
I think you'll really dig them.
And and the art is... It's really good. I don't know if the guy colored his own stuff. The color palette.
I think
someone
else did, actually. But the colors are very bright.
The colors are... Yeah.
Colors by Hillary Sycamore.
There you go.
But, yeah, awesome.
Good job, Hillary.
Kind of Tintin-esque, almost, in the brightness of some of these.
Yeah,
but
they're very simple kind of colors. Yeah.
Yeah, but a great book. And I think Jared described it pretty well, actually. If that sounds interesting, definitely check this out. It's like I said, unlike... It's not like anything I think I've read before.
Yeah.
X'd Out would be the closest thing I could think of, and that is X'd Out is a weird book.
True.
But yeah, that's is it Moon Moth or Moth Moon?
The Moon Moth.
Yeah, you should definitely read that. All right, so speaking of books you should definitely read, up next we have The Ravagers number 1 by Howard Mackey and Ian Churchill. Just know that everything I just said is a lie about that.
And by read this, we mean enjoy Ian Churchill's art by flipping quickly through it, and so not taking the time to read any word balloons.
But even just only look at individual pictures then, because if you look at the pictures in conjunction with each other, you can see the sort of skeeziness just pouring out of the page.
Oh, really? That was kind of your problem with it?
That was part of my problem with it.
I mean,
I would say I had a lot of problems with it, but it's just mostly that.
So many terrible decisions behind this. I mean, first of all, you know, from the pages of Teen Titans does not make me want to read this, because Teen Titans has been not good. And not
only
that,
it starts off and it says, beginning, if you want to know what just happened, read Teen Titans.
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
I want to know what's happening now.
It starts you in the middle of the action, but which is usually okay, but then it's like, to know what they're doing, make sure you read this and this and that.
I mean, that is mildly forgivable. I mean, for me, it's, you know, it doesn't help. But on the cover, it does say, like, from the pages of Teen Titans.
Yeah.
So you kind of assume that you should be reading Teen Titans to read this. But we don't read Teen Titans, because Teen Titans is not a good book.
Yeah, and then the choices, like, Beast Boy. What? Why?
Oh, yeah. That's such a stupid thing, but it was bugging me. Why is Beast Boy red now?
He's red or orange or something. He's like, yeah, look at him.
Why isn't he green? Yeah. You don't relaunch the universe and make Batman yellow.
Yeah.
They could have.
I don't know. That's a stupid thing that doesn't matter, but it's just combined with everything else. I was just like, it's such a fanboy kind of thing. But Beast Boy should be green. I don't get it.
And so what happens in this issue?
Okay, so basically it seems like there's a group of people that were being held
In some facility, experimented
with
on
Superboy or whatever.
Yeah. And the people that were experimenting on them are called the Ravagers. That's the thing that's weird that this is called the Ravagers.
Oh, right.
But and they've kind of escaped with the help of, it seems like, one of their torturers, and they're being chased by some sort of organization. And
the people that they escaped from are chasing them.
Yeah.
And
I don't really understand, like, did this have something to do with the culling? I feel like we're not even qualified to talk about this book.
This is ties into, like, Superboy. Like, they're basically in the same facility that Superboy was in the comics, and they were experimenting on different life forms and humans and giving them powers and making them go on crazy missions or something. I got most of that just from reading this, but...
Okay, here's the thing with this book. Ian Churchill has not always been my favorite artist. I haven't always liked his stuff, but I think this has a nice, a good cartoony style to it that I think is better than anything else I've seen from him before.
Yeah, I really like his art in this.
But the main problem with this is it's spun out of a story by Scott Lobdell, and it's written by Howard Mackey.
Yeah.
That's the and double strike.
That's basically all you should need to know. This is basically an argument against putting the writer's name on the title.
Yeah, right. Matthew from Fairfax, your question has been answered.
Yeah. The answer is no. To why don't they do that is Howard Mackey.
That's true.
And the Warblade
is in this? Or
Jared, when you tweet at creators, like when you post this, will you like tweet at Howard Mackey that we reviewed his book?
No.
Okay, good.
I only tweet at the ones we really liked.
Yeah,
this is the worst.
It's really bad.
Like, I don't even understand. Like, out of all the new books you could put out, like DC's like, all right, we lost Talking Dove. Let's put out something really good. Let's put out Ravagers.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know,
Do
you think anybody who reads DC stuff still listens to this show? Because we just rag on DC all the time.
No, not usually.
Hey, yeah, you guys should read Batman Death by Design from
DC Comics.
You should. At the end of this book, they go, next. Will there be a next, or is this the end of the Ravagers? I was like, oh my God, I'm so.
It's definitely the end for me.
Yeah, it's definitely the end for me as well. Yeah, they've made some really bad decisions. Like,
why don't they just, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, it's like you cancel the one book that Rob Liefeld is writing and put him on four more books and then bring in Howard Mackey and Tom DeFalco to write the other new stuff. But I will say Dial H was great.
That's true.
So they, and I thought World's Finest was actually really good too.
But that's about their track record, I think, with all the DC stuff lately.
Two for six.
One out of five books.
No, Batman Incorporated. So that's... Oh, yeah. Three out of six were good or
so
great.
That, well, then they're doing better than they were for the initial
launch. They're picking it up.
All right, so we shouldn't really talk about Ravagers anymore because, you know, you know how we feel about it. Let's talk about a great DC book. Let's talk about Superman Family Adventures by Franco and Art Baltazar.
Now, this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, this is the team behind Tiny Titans and Baltazar. People might know him from Patrick the Wolf Boy, but that's probably just me because I've been to too many comic conventions.
True.
But
doesn't he do Super Pets?
He does. They also do Super Pets together, I believe.
Yeah.
And this is just basically that Teen Titans formula of fun, Tiny Titans formula of like fun, happy, well-written stories with a lot of humor for kids.
One of the funniest things in this is the beginning when Superman shows up. People are like, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's Superman. Like, wow, is that a new suit? I really like the new V-neck collar.
Yeah, well, we know it takes place in the new 50s. So did Tiny Titans. Because,
right, but that's...
The Pink Lady or whatever it was.
Oh, and Tiny Titans?
Yeah, that's the only place she's shown up since the first issues.
Anyway, like that's the sort of humor that Marvel would pull off and DC normally doesn't do. Like kind of laughing at themselves, which I'm kind of impressed by.
Yeah, laughing at the V-neck designs of all the characters.
It's something they used to do more. You remember the Crisis on Infinite Earths thing that was in, the Infinite Crisis thing that was in Plastic Man.
Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff when Kyle Baker was doing Plastic Man.
Yeah, and then there was there's like Ambush Bugs sometimes.
Yeah.
I guess like they're kind of humor lines rather than just any book. They'll have like a humor book where it's like, all right, it's okay to joke around in this one.
But yeah, DC doesn't get like, you know, make meta jokes about itself very often though. That's not their MO. They want to be the epic, serious company, and it's probably why it doesn't work for me a lot of the time.
This is a great example of like, what the DC books should be like. They don't have to be as like, this is, you know, obviously written for kids, so it's a little more cartoony and funny, but it's just got so much style and heart in it, and that's missing from like, I mean,
it probably doesn't matter, but you want to tell people what the basic story of the issue is.
Yeah, the basic story is Superman is fighting some robots that Lex Luthor let loose that are trying to sap his powers, and he's getting help from the rest of the super family, which is like Krypto, Supergirl, and Superboy.
Lois Lane, Jimmy Olsen, you know, run around.
Yeah, and the antics ensue. It's just really funny, really cute.
It's just full of life, which I feel like.
No,
I think Nick had
it heart. This has heart.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's you know, it's good. I mean, you know, the people that are going to be buying this are people that are already buying Tiny Titans.
It's just
but
so
if
funny,
you never did check out Tiny Titans, especially if you have kids or you just want to read something really fun.
I mean, the subplot in this is Jimmy Olsen trying to get. What's his name? Perry White, like a cup of coffee.
Oh, yeah.
And in the midst of this robot attack.
There's this funny part where he gets it. He's like, this coffee's cold. I said two sugars. He's like, there's two sugars. There's also a little dust, rubble, and robotic debris. He's like, fair enough. And he keeps drinking. So funny.
Yeah, and it's got some activities in the back.
Yeah. Yep. It's got some puzzles for the kids out there.
I couldn't figure any of them out. They seem really hard.
I mean, you know, just a great kid's
book. It's exactly that. I really feel like... I really like Tiny Titans, and I feel like this is like almost one step up for them just because.
Yeah, because these are full length stories. As Tiny Titans was mostly like a bunch of shorts together.
And I feel like Superman's maybe a little more recognizable, so maybe some more people will read this. Yeah, but it's a great book. They definitely have kept up the good work.
Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed.
For sure.
All right. Well, that's it for reviews for this week. And I think that's it for this week's podcast.
We should tell people how to contact us.
Should we? Oh, yeah. We never did that. If you want to contact us,
woo,
you guys, you can send questions to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com. Mm-hmm. Or you can call the podcast hotline, which is, you know, doing infinitely more business than it has been the last couple of weeks, at 1-703-539-CAST. That number again, 1-703-539-CAST.
And that is also on the Big Planet webpage with all the pictures.
Yeah, so, yeah, check out the pictures. Especially look at Batman Death by Design. Cause,
kidding, look at all of them. They're such good art this week.
No, just look at that one.
Oh, you'll die great. From the design.
You'll see the other ones. They're right on there. It'll be fine.
The design will kill you.
If you die from the design, do not sue us, please.
Yes, please.
All right, so you guys got any parting words? You guys been reading anything else good real quick before we get out of here?
Oh, I finally read Kiki de Montparnasse, the book about Kiki, who is a dancer... celebre back in the early days of Paris, back in the early 20th century. Very good.
I just caught up on Incredible Hulk.
Oh, nice.
Which was pretty good, except the art has been a little uneven. But the current storyline is, it's still Jason Aaron, but now Steve Dillon joins him from Punisher Max.
Nice.
And it's so funny and wacky. Yeah, I mean, the whole issue is about Hulk. He doesn't want to turn into Banner.
Right.
And so he just keeps... he's asking the Punisher to like shoot him in the face. This bad guy who's like a half dog man shoots him in the face with heroin darts. It's so funny.
Oh, Jason Aaron,
just awesome.
Yep.
and so the punchline is that every time he like passes out, he like turns into better and he wakes up in like a crazier place. And like the end, he like wakes up and he's like somewhere underwater and there's like blue people around him and he's chained up. He's like, what the hell?
That's awesome.
It's awesome.
I've been reading No Place Like Home, which nice. I feel like is a really overlooked book right now.
Yeah, not as many people are reading it.
I've been keeping up on that.
It's so good. Yeah. It's like it takes place basically in the town where Dorothy lived and during The Wizard of Oz. And it's a really crazy, creepy story about flying monkeys attacking.
It's like if The Wizard of Oz happened and everyone covered it up because people got disappeared or kidnapped by flying monkeys.
Yeah, and it's awesome. And definitely check it out because it's. I feel like not enough people are reading that book.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool.
All right.
Yeah. All right.
Ciao.
That's a wrap.
That is a wrap, you guys. All right. We'll see you guys next time.
See you.